welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. So, what's up at OC Talk Radio today?
Well, we're getting ready for the holidays, and we take our 1 week off, so we're looking forward to that between Christmas and New Year's, and launching again, not just in a new year, in a new decade.
Oh, it is a new decade,
yeah.
And I take 2 weeks off because I record on Wednesday, which is Christmas and New Year's
Day. Right, so you're going to miss two. Yeah.
So I have 2 weeks off.
2 weeks to reflect and get ready for the new decade.
Yes, yes. And as a matter of fact, the podcast we're doing today will be the first podcast of the year next year. And
first of the decade, then, you mean?
The first of the decade, yes. And I am excited to have with us once again my personal life coach, Dina Crowder. Dina is amazing. After working together for 2 years now, I can't think of anyone that has impacted my life in the ways Dina Crowder has. Her wisdom and insight truly equals that what I consider of sages, and I don't think it's an overstatement. Now, the last time Dina was on the show, we talked about dealing with our inner critic. Well, today we're taking sort of the opposite direction, and we're going to talk about our inner power and how our inner power craves purpose. I can't wait to get into this subject. And in fact, it was a topic of our last enormously impactful coaching session. I just have so much to learn from Dina. For those of you who don't know, Dina Crowder is a high-performance strategist and chief spiritual officer for creators and leaders. She has designed innovative programs for prison parolees, judges associations, CEOs, CNN heroes, Emmy and Grammy Award winners, as well as executives for many organizations, the likes of which include Nike, Disney, Nestle, and Fox. Now, in addition, most recently, Dina had the rare honor to give a presentation at a TEDx conference that was so highly received that she received a standing ovation, which is really quite unusual. Her topic, naturally, was on power. In fact, Dina is on a mission to revolutionize the way the world understands and relates to power. Her aim is to redefine power so that we use it for good. Dina believes, now I love this, and I may repeat it, Dina believes that pure power is the capacity to directly influence and manage your life with wisdom and compassion. It is the capacity to directly influence and manage your life with wisdom and compassion. And in other words, it's all about power to, not power over. I love those ideas. So Dina, welcome once again to the next chapter with Charlie.
Charlie, hello. It's so good to be back. I feel like I'm back home.
Yeah, you just have such an inviting voice. No wonder we can talk so much. It's just fun to hear you talk. Tell me now, you just did a TEDx experience. You were dressed. Boy, your clothes were, you'll have to, I know you've done posts on it, but people will have to see the outfit you wore, which was amazing. And your presentation was equally as good. Why don't you tell me a bit about that TEDx experience?
Oh, thank you, Charlie. You know, I have to share that the outfit was the result of a collaboration between myself and one of my clients. Is that incredible?
That really is incredible, because it was a stunning outfit, and yet understated. It wasn't overstated by any means, but it was really, really good.
Well, it's fascinating because the outfit or the style that you're talking about comes out of, as I said, a collaboration. And that collaboration between myself and this client, when I first began working with her a couple of years ago, was in education, and she still is. But we discovered that she had buried a passion for clothing, for fashion, for styling, and that in the course of us getting to know one another through me coaching her, she rediscovered, reawakened this passion, and it came out, Charlie, that she had gone to fashion college. I mean, had just forgotten about it.
And forgotten about it.
Yeah, basically, it just put it in the closet. And so part of her purpose, part of her inner power connection, turned out to be something she calls divine styling, which is working with leaders who have something positive to say to have their style or their outfit match the frequency of their message.
And she teaches school at the same time.
Yes, she's still a school teacher, and yet she's opened this consulting business on the side as an expression of her passion and an expression of her purposeful service.
You know, that's so important. That's going to lead into our topic. You know, one thing I have to say, you are brilliant at helping people discover hidden talents or hidden areas of expertise or passions or desires that have been locked up for years, and you have a methodology that you use. It's not accidentally that you come up with these, that you help us discover these sorts of things, that it is your talent. But I like that you told, you spoke of her passion for design as resonating with her inner power. Mm-hmm. And so I want to say I so resonate with the truth that you put out, that inner power not only craves purpose. I love the verb crave, that inner power craves purpose. Mm-hmm. But I also believe that inner power cannot even function without purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even truly functional. There's an aberration to it. A few days ago, you told me that purpose activates power. I like that. And to me, that's the reason power craves purpose, because it craves activation. Can you talk to me a bit about that? Because I think that's so important.
It's like this. People are often looking for purpose. They're seeking it, and they feel lost without it. And you asked about the TEDx talk. That's one of the things I cover in the talk. I speak about the incredible research that has been done by leading experts in medicine, in psychiatry, in biobehavior, in psychology, that demonstrate when we don't feel we're contributing meaningfully, when we don't feel we're on purpose, our immune systems suffer, our physical bodies suffer, our psychological state suffers, and in fact, our genetic patterns really replicate those same patterns that are seen with people who are enduring chronic adverse stress. Think about that for a moment. That means we're wired for purpose, and yet we're so often seeking it in a way that is detrimental and that doesn't lead us to connect to it, because we're looking for what I call the Ten Commandments. It's like the joke, a God walks into a bar and you're just sitting in the bar, and this God says, hey, here's your manual, here's your Ten Commandments, and everything's mapped out for you, everything is decreed, the outcome is guaranteed. Why do we like that so much, that fantasy? Well, because it means we don't have to risk anything. It means we don't have to show up when we don't know exactly how things are going to go, when we don't know the outcome, when the terrain is uncertain. And, of course, that means we're not actually participating in living life. Those are dead persons' fantasies, dead person's goals, to just be sitting around and some divine messenger comes down and hands you everything you need to know.
That's why, as you took me through the archetypes, one of my archetypes was explorer, and which has to do with curiosity, and that is not sitting around and waiting, but exploring and searching and looking, and some kind of endeavor to find purpose, meaning, joy, expression, and receptivity, which I hope we talk about later, but we have to be open and receptive to sources, ideas, concepts, behaviors that have been taboo to us, and yet once we get into them, we discover how much they really mean to us. I'm thinking of the very legalistic type of religions that really prohibit people from getting into deep in their soul and finding out what God, and I mean that in the G-O-D sense, what God has in mind for these people. But it, you know what it reminds me of, Dina? It reminds me of education. You know, an infant is in an exploration style, and we begin with adolescence and move on to some sort of detailed, constructed education, but we never get out of that. We never move from childhood to adolescence, to where we're thinking on our own, to adulthood, where we're behaving on our own, and mature adulthood, where we're behaving wisely on our own. And we're stuck in I can't even remember the author's name. It ticks me off every time. But he talks about secondhand truths. We believe in secondhand truths that somebody else is telling us what our purpose is, what our meaning is, and this is what we need to be doing. And yet it negates all the passion, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely, because we just talked about that idea that power craves purpose and power activates purpose. So let's go back to that. When we talk about inner power, I'm really speaking about connecting to your spirit. And that is beyond dogma. It's beyond religion. It's simply the place where the deepest part of you connects with the deepest part of life. And when you're connected there, you feel alive. You feel connected with life, but also with the universe and with all of the other forms of life that are moving in and about us. When we're in that place, right, and we're connected to this inner power, it's like a buzz. And we do exactly what you just said. We begin something. We're open to the clues that life is sending us. And we put our feet on a path. And as we go along on this path, we get a clue that tells us to adjust. And so we go a little to the right. Oh, now we go a little to the left. Now we climb a mountain. Now we come down the mountain. We actually are engaged with living rather than sitting around and saying, I wish I knew my purpose. I wish I knew my purpose. That's not actually what's happening. What's actually happening is that we've straitjacketed our purpose, which you mentioned and alluded to when you're talking about how we're stuffing down passion. We're straitjacketing our purpose. It cannot be liberated enough to make itself really known to us because we have this too tight container in our minds of what our purpose needs to be. It needs to fit into the status quo. It needs to fit into the values we've been conditioned to accept. So the first question that we have to ask ourselves if we want to connect to this inner power and activate our purpose by taking a first step on a path is to ask ourselves, am I willing to practice radical defiance of what I've been told to value and prioritize?
Great word. Defiance is a great word.
Am I willing to say no to some of the things that our culture has said give us innate value, like an expensive pair of shoes or a handbag or a certain kind of salary. There's nothing wrong with those things, but are we pinning our innate value on those things? That's not the same thing. Are we confusing force for power?
Exactly. Force and an external force. I believe it was Meister Eckhart talked about spirituality is more about subtraction than addition.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting rid of those things, you know, those secondhand beliefs that are running our lives, yet we are leading discontented and virtually purposeless lives. I know you're taking me through the six principles of power, and one of the principles was power requires connectivity. Is that not right?
Yeah, that's the first one, is it requires connection. We got to get connected. And if we're walking around disconnected, we don't feel the flow of power. Charlie, you would be surprised at how many people have titles, positions, degrees, fancy schmancy, et cetera's, and yet when I speak with them, they realize, oh my goodness, I'm really disconnected from a sense of my own agency, my own power. I'm disconnected from my own passion, my own inner power. They feel disconnected from being on purpose. They may have a huge salary and may be written up in all of the so-called important media of the day and on TV, but yet when I speak with them, they realize, I don't even know if I'm contributing meaningfully.
Unfortunately,
they're living under this stress daily, not feeling good, heartbroken, and the first step is, oh my gosh, I've got to get connected.
Precisely. And you know what concerns me is that so many of us, and you know, and I can only speak of the United States, so many of us don't even think in these terms. It's not even, you know, they accept the status quo so easily. It's what makes democracy work. You know, you can't challenge it, you know, just go along with it. And that's what makes the whole thing work. And yet to have what we would consider a truly purposeful and meaningful life means we have to depart from the status quo, and we have to enter, as you called, risky areas of our life, scary areas even. There's places that you've taken me. You took me last week. There was a scary area. It was a part that actually frightened me. But I knew as soon as it frightened me, and I knew as soon as I had pushback on it, we were on the right track. I knew right away, as soon as I'm pushing back, then there's...
You're like, oh, we're on the right road.
We're on the right road. If I don't like this road, it must be the right road. That's why Scott Peck called it the road less traveled, because the road more traveled is the easy road, the God coming in and handing you the Ten Commandments of your life. This is instead God came in and handed you a template that says, your life is what you choose it to be, and I believe in concert with the way I've created you, with the way you've DNA'd. You were created to do a broad spectrum of things. It's not very narrow, but it's a broad spectrum of things. So I really like, it was one of the questions that I had we were going to do later, but we're doing right now, and that is talking about the connection with the spirit. I want to talk, let me see, do I want to take a break, or do I want to get into this, because this is going to be quite lengthy. I think perhaps we should take a break, because I have quite a bit to say on this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges. You're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie and our very special guest, high-performance consultant and chief spiritual guru of highly creative and productive people. And we are talking about power, and we're talking about inner power now, not necessarily power over situations and people, although it does apply, but inner power craves purpose. And we're talking that one of the things you need to do that is important is to connect with your spirit. And that is oh so difficult to do. And I hear the question, Dean, I hear the question from my listeners, our listeners, that are saying, as you asked earlier, how do I know what my purpose is? I mean, how do I even go about finding it? I've been looking for my purpose half my life, and so many people are wrestling with that. Do you have any suggestions? I know I have a couple ideas, but I really want yours.
Before the break, we talked about permission to say no. Radical defiance of what we've been taught to value and prioritize. I want to give you an example. I had a client who was in an extremely high position in the world of tech. And this particular client was not happy. I'm not happy. I hate what I'm doing. I don't like it. I know it's time for me to move on to something else. As clear as those words sound to us and sounded to this client, there was no movement. There was no action. The client continued day after day, month after month, to remain in a position that was hurtful, that was damaging, and so on and so forth. Now, what's going on here, right? It was very clear. I'm not contributing meaningfully here. I don't like it. It's making me sick. Well, what's going on there is there was a complete unwillingness to say no to the values that individual had been taught to value and prioritize. And one of the values was, you're only okay if you are working for a big, huge name brand company. If you leave and you go to a smaller company, if you leave and you start something of your own, if you leave and you become a consultant, any number of possibilities that this person could have followed, you're not valuable. You're not okay. And there we are. It's not that the client didn't understand what the next step was, because we talked about that before the break. The permission and then the willingness to say, okay, I'm going to value my design. I'm going to value my spirit, how I'm made, what I was put here to do. So the radical defiance to say no to what the old values is in relationship to our ego's defiance of why we were put here in the first place. So that client was saying, unconsciously, of course, but this is what it boils down to, I'm paying lip service to purpose, but I really don't care as much about that as I care what other people think of me. I really don't care as much about my contribution and why I'm really here and what I'm here to do as I care about people thinking that I'm important in the hierarchy of status.
I agree with that. One thing I might suggest, instead of saying no to certain things, I have found it helpful to say, I don't know. I no longer know, so I'm open to receive something different. Because everything is not necessarily no. There may be some yeses in there that are still good.
Yeah.
But that I don't know, and so I have to remain totally open. That everything is open for evaluation and change if necessary, and the things that are truly part of my inner being, my inner self, those get to stay. At least they're working on it. That's really good. You know something.
I love what you're saying. That's exactly right. You don't throw everything out. In the example I was using, that client knew that job was
right.
Very detrimental, and it was a fight. I mean, just a fight to the death. Finally, it did happen, and they moved on. But it was really an inner battle of epic proportions between the ego's thought of losing the status and what that meant versus taking this new step.
I know you've told me stories of people without naming people, but you told me stories about that have been quite intriguing, and they've been close to your family, people that have made those kinds of changes that have really helped. One of the things, Dina, that I have recently discovered, I just completed Ryan Holiday's Stillness is the Key. And it's all about peace, serenity, and he deals with the mind, the spirit, and the body. And of all things, I thought the body would be the thing I was least interested in, and it turned out to be the most interesting part of the book. And he's written two other books. I mean, I just can't recommend Ryan Holiday strongly enough to people that he's written a book titled Ego is the Enemy and the Obstacle is the Way. And then he's calling it a trilogy, but you can read them in any order. One doesn't require reading the first one. That's why I read the last one first, Stillness is the Key. But one thing I learned from Holiday is that one thing that is needed to discover your inner purpose is to make time for solitude, serenity, and reflection. To allow your inner voice to speak, it requires an art of listening rather than telling, or even hard-pressed, desperate asking, oh, tell me my purpose, because most of the time it sneaks in when you're not even looking, but merely reflecting.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Oh, I agree with it absolutely. And in fact, it's always trying to communicate with you. It is communicating in whispers. It's communicating in shouts. It is leaving clues everywhere in the form of repeating patterns, in the form of synchronicities, even in the form of some of our biggest disappointments.
Yes, yes, absolutely, because that informs so much of us.
Yes, yes. One of the things that I do every year at the end of the year, so it's December, I'm doing this now with clients, is we have a year-end review.
I know, I haven't completed mine yet.
I wasn't going to tell on you, Charlie. I was not giving that away. But in the year-end review, one of the questions is, what were your biggest disappointments this year? Some people dive right in. Others like to avoid it because they falsely think, oh, if I avoid the disappointments, if I avoid thinking about them, then I won't have to feel the pain. I won't have to feel the disappointment. It's actually very wrong, because the more they stay disconnected from connecting, remember, power begins with connection. The more they stay disconnected from really feeling the disappointment, the more they carry that burden basket of those disappointments into the new year and probably will repeat them. What we want to do is lift them so that we can allow the full wisdom that arises from the disappointment. It's like, what is the lesson from this disappointment? What is the wisdom that if you really sat with the disappointment, you can take? And then take that wisdom into the next year so you don't have to repeat, like a hamster on a wheel, the same disappointment. And this brings us back to your question about the stillness and the reflection. That's an example of stillness and reflection. That's an example of the clues. If we can simply take some time to do those types of reflections, to ask ourselves and make a list, what clues is the universe sending me? What am I hearing repeated again and again? And you write those down, that you will see a signpost that says this away, not that away, and you can take your first step.
You know, one thing it requires is it's not haphazard. I have discovered, in order for me to have these times of solitude, serenity, and reflection, requires discipline.
Yeah.
And for me, and different people, it's different ways and different times, but for me, it's in the morning, and I have about an hour and a half every morning. I get up, so, you know, I'm functioning by 9 o'clock, 9:30, but I have an hour and a half of eating a certain way, of meditating, of spiritual reading, of journaling, where I just let these things out. And there are times, especially of meditation, that I have 20 to 30 minutes of total silence and letting my inner self speak to myself. So I think in order to get to that place, it does require discipline. It doesn't happen accidentally. That it has to become something that is important to you. That knowing your purpose is not haphazard. It is an intentional effort. Would you agree with that?
I agree. It is intentional. And one of the words that I like to offer people instead of discipline, which sometimes freaks people out, is devotion or even desire. Because when people think of discipline, they are, oh, I can't, I don't, or they have these nightmares about nuns in school.
It's
like, okay, well, what are you devoted to? What are you devoted to? Because when you can acknowledge and connect, there's our word again, so what it is that you're devoted to, then that can give you the oomph and the motivation to be consistent with whatever the practices are, and whatever the success structures are that are going to support you in taking the next step and the next step and evolving, accelerating, and moving higher. And when I say desire, it's the same. You could ask yourself, okay, well, devotion doesn't work for me and discipline doesn't work for me, but desire, let me ask myself, what do I really desire? And not what anybody else wants for me, not what somebody else, as you were saying, says I should be, but what do I desire? And when you can connect to that, you have an awakening of energy and of passion, and that can see you through.
You know, I have two important comments, and they're, because you said you said many wonderful things there. One thing about discipline, I like devotion, but you know what words work for me? This is what works for me. I can't say it's going to work for anybody else. But instead of discipline, I develop a routine or a ritual. So it's not like a discipline, like Jocko Willink, who's a highly decorated SEAL, one of the most highly decorated SEALs, said discipline is freedom. That is true. But discipline has such negative connotations to it. That's why, you know, really successful people all have. I just read a piece on Winston Churchill, and he had his routines. His ritual, his day was ritually established, the way he lived his day. And look what Winston Churchill, I mean, he perhaps is the most accomplished person of the 20th century. I think he's certainly going to fit in the top five. That's for truth. And then I wanted to say that, and then you talked about something else that I really think was important. I wanted to get onto, and you were talking about Do you recall what you were talking about in your second part? Yeah, both of us get brain dead on that.
I don't know, but when you were, you mentioned earlier about status quo and about democracy and even, you know, society functioning because people accept their roles. And yet, we, you and I, Charlie, live in a country that was founded by people who had a, speaking about defiance, a radical defiance against the status quo of what governments before them had been.
Absolutely.
In Europe.
Absolutely.
In fact, Jefferson said, we've got to refresh. We've got to refresh. We've got to have a revolution every few years. And he was hoping that it didn't require bloodshed, but I think they had a very big understanding that we always have to be in this process of exploring, of being curious, and of asking, okay, what's my contribution now? How do things need to change? How do I need to update? Because they were updating everything that they'd been conditioned to value and prioritize.
Oh, and
they created this system.
And that leads me to thinking of a thing I heard by comedian Seth Meyers. And he said, if Jefferson were to come back today, he'd hold up the Constitution and say, you mean you guys haven't added any shit in 200 years? You've left it the same way? Don't you know we were just thinking what was necessary then? Times have changed. You know, it's time to review this. And I've always gotten a kick out of that. I want to change something that I'm not even sure that it exactly has to do with what we're talking about, but I think it's so important for me to tell a story about what impact solitude and serenity and reflection have come upon me. And that is in perhaps, Dina, the last 3 years, and you and I talk quite frequently about this, I have reached much clarity on my inner purse, on my inner purpose, by what I'm calling the invasion of my feminine muse. Some call it the divine feminine. I know she is of God, and I wrote to you that she has a rock solid softness, which is, you know, sort of contradictory, but there is a softness to her, but at the same time, it is rock solid. And it has probably made as much impact on my life as anything that I've thought of before, and that my leadership style, I still have the male part of, you know, the strength of leadership, but compassion, empathy, care of people, the way I present materials, thinking in the feminine it's completely changed the way I attempt to influence people, and I attempt to, I don't want to say exert power, but use power in positive ways. And
yeah.
And I think there's much of that. You know, we have the women's movement, but the women's movement is really copying the men's movement. And I believe in the female being the female, and that female aspect, and I think we both have carry both of those genders within us to some degree. And that feminine is so powerful for me.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I'm going to say things that are stereotypical or kind of putting things into one big category, even though there's a lot more nuance, but I'm going to do that for the sake of the conversation. And feminine is associated in this kind of stereotypical way with receiving. It is associated with the ability to receive and to hold. And also with compassion. Those that would be considered a feminine capital F value. Does that mean that men don't receive or don't have the capacity for compassion? Absolutely not, because each person, as you've just described, has both feminine and masculine traits. This is obviously quite simplistic, but it helps us to have the conversation. And right. What we are steeped in this culture of power over. And what's power over? That's where there's a dominator and a dominated. There's a ruler and a ruled. We have so internalized that system as the norm that we don't even see it. It's the water we swim in, the air we breathe. We don't even notice that it's going on, but it is. So by you or anyone getting in touch with what we are calling the feminine qualities, the goddess within, that's so trendy and cliche, but again, I think we know what we're talking about here. What then happens is there's an ability to step away from the automatic, habitual power over way of being and to integrate these other things into our inner power system so that we actually are way more powerful than we were when we were simply practicing what we would call the masculine traits, which are doing. Yeah, doing and kind of external building and moving. Those are more of the masculine traits, and our culture of power over that has been distorted is functioning on a distorted masculine principle. Masculine that doesn't have compassion, that doesn't value wisdom.
And what happens then is you lose engagement, empowerment. You lose people being excited about following a leader if it's power over. It's just, well, I've got to do this to keep my job, or I've got to do this to do a task, rather than I'm part of the solution and my value as a human being is appreciated and I'm getting to use my talents because they are appreciated. I don't have to hold them back.
Yeah.
Okay, there's one thing I think it's getting time to close. There is one thing I want to go back to that we talked way back, but
okay,
it's a big concern of mine, and that was where we were talking about disappointments of the year.
Yeah.
Do you know one of the difficulties that I can face with disappointments and failures is shame and embarrassment? And that is so difficult. Who wants to go there?
Right.
You just don't want to go to that place. And yet, it is a dark place that we enter the dark to see the light. That there is, you know, as they say, light at the end of the tunnel. There's light coming out of the darkness there. But that shame and embarrassment is so critical to face, because there are times the things that I may do that I may consider shameful or embarrassing that are very important things for me to do, that they are actually okay in my set of values, but I'm listening to secondhand beliefs that get in the way.
Yeah, well, it's been said that shame, and this is Brené Brown, who's quite popular right now,
right.
Even has a special on Netflix, talks about shame being the feeling or belief that who I am is bad and guilt is what I did was bad. So when we talking about making a mistake or doing something and then, or not doing something and then saying, gosh, I feel ashamed, it's in her understanding some kind of flavor of who I am is bad, and that feels awful. But let me take that further. What I see is that when that whole thing is happening, what we do is we disconnect.
Exactly.
If, you think that who you are is bad, or sometimes even if it's guilt and you think, oh, what I did was so bad, you don't feel worthy of staying connected to your spirit. You don't feel worthy of having your purpose be clear, meaningful, because you've already judged yourself and sentenced yourself to this punishment of unworthiness. The connection being the first principle of power, the first thing that we have to attend to when we notice, I'm feeling really bad, I'm feeling like I messed up, I'm feeling like I made a mistake, I'm feeling ashamed, I'm feeling guilty. Oh, my first order of business is to connect. And however you do that, whether you connect through prayer, whether you connect through meditation, whether you have a buddy that you get into regular accountability with, that you help with each other's goals, all of these things work. But the thing is, you have to remember, nothing works if you're not willing to get connected first.
Boy, that is brilliant, and it means sort of fighting the fear of that in order to receive insightful results. Like when I was saying, you don't necessarily have to say no, you have to say I don't know, and that I don't know has to do with shame and guilt and embarrassment. Yes. That's I right. don't know that I Correct. Really did shameful things. They may not, in my DNA God-given value system, they may not be shameful activities, although socially they could be shameful activities.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, I was told many years ago when I began on this path to helping others, I was told by a very close family member, it would be better if you were a heroin addict because there's treatment for that. I was told by another very close family member, oh my God, this is just the most embarrassing thing ever. What do I tell my friends? I was mocked by another family member. I was told by someone who was interested in dating me that I would never, ever succeed. I was told by someone else who was interested in dating me that I was a dangerous woman because I might be responsible for having women disagree with their husbands on certain ideas if I had them going into self-reflection. Right. And that's just the beginning of all of the beliefs that were thrown at me. And some of them did sting, and some of them did bring forth a feeling in me of internalizing, or an experience of internalizing some of the shame the doubt. Oh, I mean, is it really? I mean, and so I had to practice what I'm preaching with connection. Empowers us. It empowers us. And so we simply have to let go and offer those things up and then keep coming back to the point of connection again and again.
And that connection is what drives us to our purpose.
Yes.
And our inner power is craving that purpose.
Yes.
But the vehicle you are suggesting, not yes. but and the vehicle you are suggesting, is connection with our spirit.
Yes, that is correct.
Dina, we definitely could talk for hours. it is always so enlightening to talk with you. Thank you. Thank you so much for this time together. Well, I was away from the mic for a while there. I was had my eyes closed and I was thinking. I so appreciate you and everything you're doing. Thank you for spending time with me today.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Well, you're the great. And I'll see you on Saturday for our Zoom year-end.
Yes, you will.
Whatever.
Be there or be square.
Is that video or audio?
It is a video.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. That's enough of that. I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. Until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.